Welcome to the XBLA Fancast, episode 9 for Wednesday, April 20th, 2011. And it's brought to you by XBLAfans.com, your number one source for XBLA news and discussion. And I'm John Laster, and I'm joined today by Andrew Cruz, Stephen Haberman, and Steve Melton.
Hello.
What up, 8-bit boys and girls?
Hey, hey.
All right, you guys want to each introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm Andrew, writer for XBLA Fans.
Hey, I'm Steve Haberman. I'm a contributor to XBLAfans.com.
And I'm Steve Melton. I'm the deputy editor at XBLAfans.com.
All right, guys. So there were a lot of new announcements this past week. I don't know how many of them you looked into, but we had Burnout Crash, Backbreaker Vengeance, Red Johnson's Chronicles Episode 1, and then a couple Sega games that are getting re-released as well. So what did you guys think about those? Any of them stand out to you?
Burnout.
Yeah.
Obviously. Absolutely. I mean, that's a huge name, so you bring it to arcade, you're going to get a lot of downloads. If you hit that $10 price, you're going to get a lot of downloads. If you put the $15 price in, you're still probably going to get a lot of downloads. So I bet a lot of people are excited about that.
Yeah, I'm sure they're banking on just the title alone is going to pick people up. But the problem I have is that, you know, you had a couple of burnouts that weren't by Criterion. And I was probably one of the few people that wasn't impressed with the new Need for Speed. So I have a little bit of concern. If they go back to maybe the Burnout Revenge style,
oh yeah,
I'm all over that.
Yeah,
I just want crash mode from those games. Like just ramming into making $1 million worth of damage. Like, I love that.
Yeah, definitely. That's the, in my opinion, that's the only thing really that sets this franchise off from any other racing franchise. I don't play many racing games much, but I know that when I want a fun arcadey one, I always look for a Burnout game.
No, my thing about race games is I've always had more fun, you know, just crashing into stuff. I think we talked about this when we talked about Days of Thunder.
Yeah.
My favorite part of that game was just being able to go around backwards and slam into stuff. Because
yes.
Like I got the new NASCAR game sent to me for another website I was working on. And it drove me nuts because I'm like, I got bored. And I just wanted to, you know, see cool crashes. But you can't go backwards because instantly, you know, the yellow flag comes on. And it's just like, that's bad sportsmanship. I'm like, but it's fun.
Yeah.
I just want to have fun. I mean, I'm not good at racing games in general. So, I mean, I enjoy more of an arcadey experience. Like, I actually really enjoyed Blur when that came out.
Yeah, that game was great.
Yeah, and I wish something like that would be coming out for Xbox Live Arcade, you know, something with more of that kind of combat thing. And moving on to Backbreaker, though, did any of you guys play that when it came out last year?
No, I followed it because I was really interested in the Euphoria engine that they use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because at the time they were going to use it on the new Indiana Jones game, which turned out to be a Wii title that was really subpar, but you know, it looked really good, but, you know, it didn't have the NFL license, so I think that's what killed it.
Oh, well,
yeah.
I was actually working for a sports website at the time, and I had to review it, and I had to play a lot of it. And the main problems I had with it was the lack of, you know, the NFL branding just really kills it, and the camera angles were just kind of funky. But the thing that the game had that was really, really standing out was the tackling alley mode they had.
Oh yeah.
And if that's what this is, if they are just, you know, releasing, you know, a revamped version of that, this is going to be amazing. Because I mean, it was an absolute blast, because literally what you're doing is, you know, you're a big football player just running through hitting people. And I mean, the Euphoria engine and all the other physics to this game are just beautiful. I mean, the Euphoria engine's the same thing you see in the Star Wars game Force Unleashed, where you have, you know, the people and how they react, and it's just really, really, really good. And I mean, if they can just make this game distilled down to what it was good at, and that was the hits, it'll definitely be worth checking out for sure, especially if they keep it at that $800 price point.
Yeah, but still, I don't know if people care if you don't have the names of the players in there that you want. Like, when you play a sports game, you're basically playing it to, like, live out like your dreams of like your team winning or something like that. Like you like Peyton Manning, so you want to be Peyton Manning. And I just don't see like being like Bob Smith quarterback number 12 or whatever names they decide to go with. Like, I just don't see the draw in any sports games that doesn't have licenses of whatever the most popular organization is in that sport.
No, I think that was definitely the problem with it when it was a retail release. But if it moves down to, you know, that XBLA level, I think people are going to be a lot more forgiving if the mechanics are fun. Because, I mean, it's not trying to be a Madden if it moves down to this level. It's trying to be more of an arcade-like experience, especially if it's not even a complete football game in a sense, and it's more of the tackling alley experience, which was absolutely fantastic.
There was actually a really good... what was it? I think it was either the day of the Super Bowl or near that, they released the Backbreaker iPhone game for free. And it was the Backbreaker Alley mode, and that's all it was. But having it being in tilt and having it be, you know, just a simple that simple tackle alley mode, it was so addictive. And, you know, and it takes out that whole idea of, you know, you being this player. No, you're, you know, it's kind of like the first-person football or the third-person football, where you're just trying to, you know, meet these simple goals. And in the end, that's, you know, what is exciting about regular football when you're, you know, you're playing as the running back, as your, you know, road to the show, or the create a player mode. So I think it could gain some legs if it sticks with that, you know, tackle alley mode.
See, I kind of am taking the opposite spin of all you guys on this. I'd much rather pick up a full football game with nobody that's famous and get it on XBLA and get it cheaper than have to buy Madden 2011, Madden 2012, Madden blah, 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 you know, so on and so forth. And for me, the only way that this is going to sell for me is if it has more than Tackle Alley or if it's 400 points.
Yeah.
Because, well, you know, Tackle Alley, from everything I've seen, it looks really interesting, but I just can't imagine dropping 800 points, $10, you know, U.S. on a title that all you do is just go to the other end and get tackled, or try not to be tackled, I guess. If it has, you know, at least, you know, some arena football or something like that, I'm all over it. I'd rather pay 1,200 points for a full game than the 400 just for the tackle out.
Yeah, but I feel like there's already a $10, it's down to $10 now, I believe, on the... XBLA right now, Madden Arcade, that's an arcadey football experience with people that you care about, people that you watch and cheer for every Sunday.
To be fair, it's about 2 years outdated at this point. Donovan McNabb is still, you know, a Philadelphia Eagle, but I mean, a lot of the type of people who aren't looking for Madden aren't really looking for that up to date, you know, NFL feel. I mean, I'm a huge Madden fan, so I mean, whenever anything new comes out about that, I'm always all over it. Part of it comes from the fact that, you know, I'm based out of Orlando, so I've had the opportunity to go down and visit those guys a couple times. And, I mean, I just love what they're doing for the most part. Like, I mean, you have those people who go out there and say that, you know, it's the same game every year, but there's so much different each year if you actually, you know, dig into the game. And I know their fans are always grateful when they see something new.
See, on the inverse of Backbreaker, you've got the new NBA Jam that's coming out this fall, and it's going to have roster updates, so you get the arcade experience and you get the real players and you get the roster updates, so there's no outdating. I don't understand why sports games can't just, you know, I know Andrew's anti-DLC a lot of times, but I would rather pay, give me a sports game that says Madden 2010 and that goes for 5 years and I pay 400 to 800, I'd even pay 800 points for the next year's roster, but I won't buy a sports game because of it.
Without a doubt, that's definitely I'd say 90% of sports gamer fans would agree with you that if they could save $50 and just buy a $10 DLC add-on pack every year to update the rosters, that's what they would do. Because most people, even though you say it's not the same game every year, John, the majority of the people look at it as, it is the same game.
I would disagree with you there. I think the majority of the people who aren't avid sports fans, like, you have to remember that this is a demographic that's the same as, you know, like Call of Duty. In the sense that, you know, a lot of us look at Call of Duty and we say, what was the difference between Call of Duty Modern Warfare 1, Modern Warfare 2, and all of those? No, I mean, like, that's the same type of, you know, look that people have with this. So, I mean, the people who, that is the one game they buy a year, which I know plenty of people who have an Xbox 360, and the only reason they have is Madden. So, I mean, for those people, they only spend $60 a year. So they want that new, completely up-to-date Madden. So I think this is going to be something that, you know, can hit that other, you know, just grouping. I mean, it's going for a completely different audience. And I mean, they were trying to go for a completely different audience when they went on retail. It just did not work out. It was just too hard to go as a budget title. I personally don't understand the concept of budget titles at this point anymore. It makes more sense to just go on Xbox Live Arcade. Like, I was thinking the same thing when NBA Jam came out. I was like, you guys were originally could have gone for Xbox Live Arcade, but you didn't. And it would have made a whole lot more sense. And I mean, I know they were looking at it at one point. I've seen the build.
And they actually had, you know, they charged the full price for this NBA Jam. It was going to be...
I think they knocked off 50.
Yeah, $10. But well, still, that's still bad enough. You got if you're going to be a budget title, you got to be $30 at the most.
Yeah, for sure.
But even say, that's double than what it's worth.
I'm with you, John. What's the point of a retail title that's budget for? And honestly, how many of us look at the budget titles and then skip them completely, even if they might be a good game? Because you're like, well, there's a reason it's $20.
Yeah. I think that's definitely a problem, is there's that stigma of, you know, it's a budget title. Clearly there's a reason. Like, either it was something where they just couldn't finish it and they just wanted to push out the door to make as much money as they could, or, you know, it just wasn't intended to be good in the first place. I mean, that's the way a lot of the people I know look at it, despite the fact that you have a lot of budget games that are actually not bad. There's a lot of underrated ones. Like, a bunch people I know always reference Majin and the Forbidden Kingdom. I mean, I haven't played much of it, but what I did play, I enjoyed.
My last two games on disc I bought were budget titles, You Don't Know Jack and Death Smiles, and both are great games.
Yeah, You Don't Know Jack was great, but I really do wish I'd come to Xbox Live Arcade again, just because it would have made a good fit, for me at least.
Yeah.
And it looks like one of the best early games on Xbox Live Arcade has been delisted, and that's Marble Blast Ultra. So do you guys have any memories of playing that game?
Oh, yeah. You guys play it all, or is this me only?
I have this frustration with games where you can fall endlessly. I think it's such a cheap way to die. And so I have to admit that Marble Blast really irritated me at some points, but I did see the brilliance in it. I love the fact that they offered it for a budget price. Of course, it wasn't originally $400, but
no,
eventually dropped, and the DLC was super cheap. So for those people that were interested, this is a huge hit.
Yeah, it was probably the most popular XBLA game for the first couple years of the console's life. Just off the top of my head, I can't really think of anything that would have challenged it. But it was also the first one that had an online community that lasted a very long time. I mean, 5 years after it came out, you could hop on Marble Blast and find a game online within 10 seconds with no problems. And that's impressive, because probably one out of every, 25 XBLA games has a community that sticks. And to have one that sticks that long is quite a achievement.
No, yeah, that's something I was definitely talking about with Todd earlier, actually, and we're thinking about even doing a show just devoted to it, is what do you have to do to make a community that sticks? I mean, you have a lot of games like Battlefield 1943 that have stuck through it, but then you have other games like Breach or, I'm blanking on a couple of the other shooters, but they haven't.
Blacklight,
that's what I was trying to think of, Blacklight Tango Dance. I mean, Monday Night Combat's done pretty well, but I mean, it's just a very hard thing to keep an online community that sticks on Xbox Live Arcade.
I think you just got to be a unique game, really. When you think of Marble Blast, you think of Battlefield, you think of Monday Night Combat. You really think of three of the more unique titles on XBLA. There's not many people out there that can mimic what they do, and if they did, they probably failed at it.
Yeah,
like
for
Breach.
Sure.
and you know, all those games knew that they were good games, number one, and they knew what they were worth. So, like, Marble Blast, those guys eventually learned, you know, hey, even though at the time we were the best game out there, at some point they realized, well, people aren't willing to pay $800. They went down to $400, and they kept it going.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're starting to see that again on the Xbox dashboard with some of these older titles dropping in prices. I think that's going to be another way that people are going to keep their games going, because it's going to have to end up being that way. Nobody wants to pay, like, Lego Star Wars on Games on Demand is still $30, and that game's like 4 years old. I can go get it in the used game store for $5.
Please don't get me started on Games on Demand.
Has been a terrible service since the second it launched. I think most people would agree with that.
let me let me just cut in here, because one of the things that I mean, games on demand are, it's there so that you can just download it and get it when you're at home, and the convenience. Now, the prices are pretty terrible, but Xbox is still, they're starting to do, you know, the Steam sale. They are pushing a lot of games to these sale prices, and hell, I just bought, you know, I played Castle Crashers on the PS3, so I rebought it for the 360 when it was on sale. I just got Monday Night Combat and Comic Jumper, and there's some games that I just missed. So I mean, XBLA is doing a great job at doing the sales prices, but at least Games on Demand has the options, because I do play a lot on PS3. And this week or last week, they just released Assassin's Creed, like one. I love my PlayStation. I play a lot of games on it, but there's very little when it comes to digital games being offered. So at least XBLA has a lot to offer when it comes to games on demand.
Well, no, I have no problem with Xbox Live Arcade. I do not like the Xbox Live, you know, original or whatever.
Games on demand.
I mean, just it doesn't have a decent price. Like, it's completely unreasonable. Now, I understand the whole convenience factor of it, you know. You can download Halo without leaving your couch. But if you do leave your couch, or even if you just go to your computer and order it on Amazon and you get it, you know, in the next 3 days for free off shipping, you're going to pay like half the price.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's not even close. Let
me give you a situational as to why I like games on demand. So I have a daughter who's almost two, and she loves discs. So I have to hide all this stuff, or it'll be back in my bedroom or something. That, I mean, I'm just one situation. But I actually, for instance, when Reach came out and they had it on sale the first week, I dropped the $50 because, it, you know, she can steal a disc and it won't matter because I've already, you know, I went and traded it in. I do think, though, they need to get into putting those games on sale like the new XBLA games, because I think that, like you guys, that, you know, for instance, Red Dead Redemption is $40. Well, you can go into a used game store and buy it for like $35, unless you go to GameStop and you have to pay like $50.
So, well, unless they're doing their buy two, get one free, which at that point, I mean, it's actually reasonable.
Yeah, but the whole idea being that you can, if they would do some sort of sale, they would actually drive some actual.
I completely understand, you know, not having the manpower, the time to want to go through and, you know, update prices like daily or something, like, you know, like a site like Amazon does. And that's outrageous to ask for that. But it would be nice to see, you know, at least some kind of periodic sales, even if it's not going to be a permanent thing.
Well, yeah,
like they
absolutely.
Do with Xbox Live Arcade games.
If they took the chance to, you know, contact the developers and say, you're offering games on demand, you know, you want to kill that that used, you know, market, sell these for the price of used or even half the price of used, just to catch people. Because I definitely agree that if the prices went down, you would see a lot of communities going back to some of those great games.
No, I definitely agree, and especially with the size of the hard drives that are out now, there is the potential for, you know, developers to kind of cut out the middleman on the retailer on this, and they have the opportunity, if they were reasonable with their prices, to get people to buy it digitally, because I know I have a wall of games I'm actually staring at right now, and it takes up way too much space, and I don't want to get rid of them, because, I mean, a lot of these I like, or, I mean, they have some kind of value to them, just because, I mean, it's a good game to me. I don't want to just dump it, or I don't want to give it to GameStop for, you know, $3. It's definitely something that would be nice to have, to be able to get everything, you know, on a digital platform, which, I mean, that's something we might be seeing with the next consoles for all we know. And we finally got some sales data from GamerBytes, and it looks like Beyond Good and Evil, Torchlight, and Full House Poker did extremely well, whereas Battle LA, Ghostbusters, the cheap kind of movie cash-ins they were, did okay, and then Islands of Lockthrough, Strania, and Russian Attack just did pretty bad, especially Russian Attack.
Yeah, that is god-awful. I can't believe it did that low. I mean, I didn't think that badly of it.
Right, yeah. That's how I felt, too. I mean, I had to review it, and it had its problems, but I think for those casual gamers that can get over, you know, the quirks of it, it actually could be fun at points. I'm just really surprised that it tanked so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what really surprises me is how bad Swarm did, but then again, its price is 1,200 points, which I know me and Andrew have harped on. And when you know that there's going to be a sale now, pretty much, you know, 3 months down the road, and it's releasing with three other games, it's kind of hard to pay that full 1,200 points when you could buy something else for less.
Yeah, especially coming from Hothead, a company that has had a couple games flop in the past because they charged 1,600 and 1,200 points, you would think that they would have played this round safe and gone with the 800-point mark.
Well, Hothead did Deathbank, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was one of my personal favorites.
They also did the Penny Arcade games.
The Penny Arcade games, which were good, but they were just way overpriced.
Yeah, 1,600 points. I mean, they just now dropped to 800, and by this point, nobody cares.
Yeah, that's the problem. I got the first one through a review code. I didn't even buy the second just because it was too much money.
Yeah, I caught them both on Deal of the Week. Both great games, but both only worth 800 points.
Yeah.
Well, I'm liking that. You know, the good stuff rose to the top. Otherwise, you know, Full House Poker sold really well, and I'm loving that community and their live events that were just like 1 vs. 100. You know, just having 4 hours of live gaming. They see about 12,000 to 17,000 players when I'm playing, so I'm excited to see that in Torchlight. I was a huge fan of game.
Definitely now, Full House Poker, I think, is going to do even a little bit better now that the U.S. has blocked Poker Stars and all of those sites. Like, I mean, Full Tilt you can no longer get to, so I mean, those are the sites I used to play on periodically, you know, and just play some just free roll type games. I mean, you can't do that anymore. So if you want to play poker, Full House Poker is now a good
spot
to go.
Find yourself a console.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not for money or anything, but hey, it's still fun.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about the longevity of this game, though, you know, because I really think that they need to add something to it. Honestly, I haven't played it yet, but, you know, down the road, they're going to need to have some sort of actual rewards. And I think I heard something about that, you know. If you're in a big tournament, you win, you know, you should get some points or an avatar award or something like that.
Down the road, I think that would definitely be something that they should look into, kind of like what they did with 1 vs. 100, especially if they can find a way to get it sponsored. I mean, 1 vs. 100 was absolutely phenomenal. I wish that they had been able to keep that going. But, I mean, it was kind of sad to see it go. But, I mean, it did have a nice run. It went pretty long. And yeah. I think this game is something we'll see around for at least another 6 months to a year, if not even longer.
Yeah, because people still play the other Texas Hold'em game on XBLA. It's not hard to find a game in that, so...
Well, wasn't that one free at one point or something?
For a little while, it was free for, like, an Old Spice promotion or something like that.
That's what I thought.
But...
Because I remember I didn't
I'm on a horse.
Yeah, no, it was way before the I'm on a Horse campaign. This was back, like, 2006.
And now you got Dairy Queen kind of doing their own little copy of that with shaving squirrels, and it's just kind of weird.
I have no idea what that means, and I'm not even gonna ask.
Dairy Queen's done their own little spoof off that kind of speaking of, you know, bad spoofs in a sense. Red Faction Battlegrounds released, and THQ said that they really think the reception's been a disappointment, saying that they don't really think it was a good game, but they don't think it was a bad game.
Yeah, so, well, what are you saying when you say you don't think your game is a good game? I mean,
exactly.
That, yeah, okay, you can play the it's not a good or a bad game, that's fine, you can play that, but Jesus, if you're the company making it and you say the words it's not really a good game, then that's nobody's going to take you serious.
Even behind closed doors, if you say that, that's one thing, but you know, when you're out doing the PR for it, you're well, I don't think it's a good game.
Yeah, and let me just say, it is a bad game. I'm a dual stick enthusiast. I will play and endure most of them and enjoy a lot of them that other people won't, just because that's my genre of choice. And about 10 minutes into the demo, I was just kind of laughing at how comically bad it was. It was trying to be Assault Heroes, but it was everything wrong trying to be Assault Heroes, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the problem with it is you can go through and you can buy a game like Assault Heroes and just get that for the same price, if not cheaper.
Cheaper,
and
if I mean, you get
it's
the first
a whole
one.
Lot better.
Yeah, whole
you
lot
know,
better.
I mean, it doesn't have the name recognition of, you know, Red Faction, but I mean, Red Faction just honestly did not seem to fit the type of game they decided to make.
If anything, this hurt the Red Faction name for anybody that didn't know what Red Faction was about, and they thought, oh, here's a $10, like, maybe they thought of, like, oh, it's similar, like, when Dead Rising had a little download that you could buy.
I think you could argue that, but you also gotta look at how Dead Space did their thing, which was god-awful as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I really don't think it had much of an impact on Dead Space 2 sales.
You know, the thing that could have saved this is, I don't know how they got to the twin stick thing out of the game. Like, how did that get past the concept stage? Because if this were, you know, when you play Red Faction Guerrilla, it's more like Harm's Way. You know, you're third person. If you had third person driving guns just like Red Faction and you had an arena, you know, you could have done a Twisted Metal kind of thing with Red Faction, and that might have worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
that's
environment
rages. So, sorry.
Go ahead, Steve.
I was going to say, that's something that I just heard. I was just reading about Rage. They are doing a vehicle combat mode for their online. So their single player will be a full single player shooter, but their online will actually be a vehicular combat game.
Oh, yeah. Nice. That could be cool.
Yeah. The thing about Red Faction for me is it's always been just about destroying stuff, and that's all I want to do in the game. Like, it's like Just Cause was for me. I mean, the only way to play that game is to not actually play it. You don't actually want to play the story. You just want to go around and blow stuff up.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's the most fun I had with the newer one. Is, I mean, I love the fact that they had a gun that disintegrated, you know, the support pillars for the buildings, and you could just watch it fall on people.
Yeah.
Like, that's just great. But, I mean, a twin-stick shooter, it kind of loses that feel to it. I mean, it's not the same type of game.
No, and even though Red Faction, the franchise, like, focuses on blowing things up, like, that, when you think of that game, you think of, like, destroying environments. The environments in this little arcade game is also destructible, like, all around the edges and whatnot, and there's gas barrels everywhere. But the problem is that all those little explosions cause damage. Like, you feel like you can't move when you're playing this game, because you take more damage from the environment than you do the enemy, and that's just not a good situation.
I really wish that they took what they did at PAX East, and they had like, here's 10 minutes or 5 minutes, break up everything you can on screen as quickly as you can, and once it's over, you know, the high scorer wins. And that would have been a great way to show people, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And it released the same week as Yar's Revenge, which I know, Andrew, you've played a good bit of that.
Do
you have anything to share?
I thought it was a little difficult, and I thought it looked good, but I thought in the tutorial they taught you moves a little too fast. Like, they don't give you enough time to truly understand, like, how to use one weapon before they teach you the next one. Like, literally 5 seconds later, they give you one enemy to shoot, and they're like, all right, well, you've learned it, so here's the next one. And I felt like I really hated the end of the demo, because I got to the end, I stuck through it, I died a few times, and I still stuck through it. I get to the end, I fight this giant flying grasshopper thing, and I kill it almost down to nothing, and it cuts into the, well, if you want 10 levels, then buy it now, and if you want to see how this battle ends, buy it now. And I was just like, ugh, I did all this, all I wanted to do was kill that boss, and I was shutting it off at that point anyways, and then it doesn't even let me do that. But it wasn't like a terrible game, it really wasn't my kind of game.
Well, the people I've been talking to have played through the entire thing. I mean, I haven't had the opportunity yet. I've been busy with a few other games, but they basically just said it's fun. It's just really, really short. So the type of people who are going to like this type of genre, it's just not the best out there, just because there's not the longevity to it.
Yeah. And
it doesn't really have that you want to keep replaying it even after you beat it, and it's pretty short to beat in the first place.
Yeah, and if you were to compare it to any other XBLA game, I would compare it to very similar to Aces of the Galaxy, and I feel that Aces of the Galaxy is far superior to Yar's Revenge.
You know, I like the demo well enough.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I like about on-rail shooters is that they don't have to worry about people getting where you normally wouldn't be able to see, so they can kind of regulate the frame rate and still make it look really pretty.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun to look at. It was fun to play through, but like Andrew said, you know, by the end of it, you're just like, okay, well, I've got 20 other games I want to play, so this one's going to be, you know, if it ever goes on sale for like 300 points, I'll pick it up.
Yeah, that's the same thing I thought to myself too, like, yeah, maybe for 400 someday when they do the 50 off sale, which you know is going to happen. I'll think about picking it up. But for now, I've got, you know, 20 0 out of 200s in my games library, and I need to start knocking those out.
Yeah, for sure. And it came out with Might of Magic Clash of Heroes, and I know, Steven, you said you played a good bit of that?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big fan of, like, Ubisoft's Might and Magic series. They have Heroes of Might and Magic on the PC. And this one is just a perfect mix of, like, match 3 and turn-based strategy. The goal is basically, you know, there is a strong story. You're collecting, you're looting, you're finding treasure, but it's kind of the story of these kingdoms being attacked by the demon world. And the neatest part is that aspect of that in-fight strategy of you're trying to group same-colored teammates and same-colored creatures together to make them a good fighting force. The more you connect, the stronger your attacks are, or if you turn them sideways, you set them up as walls. And if you attack through your opponent's line of defense, it'll hit their health bar, and that's how you beat your opponent, by destroying their health bar. That's a simple explanation, but I love the style. The new HD, you know, the game was originally released on DS, and the new style that they've done, it's just a little bit brighter, a little bit more colorful, and it really pops on the XBLA. It's definitely a worthwhile game, and it's a long game. It's a good full purchase.
No, it's definitely one I was interested in until I downloaded the demo, and then I played it, and I realized I can't play this game. And I was actually talking to Ben Gilbert from Joystick on Twitter about this, and both of us are colorblind.
Yeah.
So we
that's where I thought you were going with that.
Bad problems with this game. Like, they didn't make enough differentiation between the colors. They didn't go through and add in any kind of colorblind options. I mean, there's not a, you know, you can click this to change the colors, or you can click this to add shapes. I mean, that's actually my personal favorite. Like Hexic, HD, mm-hmm. It had that just simple add in the shapes thing. Mm-hmm. So for me, I could just look at it and I see the different shapes, because 4 or 5 of the colors half the time look the same on that game. And for this one, it's more the yellows and the greens and a few other things, but I mean, it's just, it doesn't work, which it makes a really, really good game absolutely unplayable for about 7% of the male population.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks.
And that's something I never thought of.
Yeah, a lot of people don't think of that, and hopefully we see a patch for that, because this is a big name title, so hopefully they do the right thing and try to work on some type of solution for that.
Yeah, and they've got the support of Ubisoft behind this, so I mean, that's something that easily could be patched. I mean, I hope it is, because I'd love to play it, but at the time it is now, it's it's one I'm going to have to pass on.
Yeah.
And then Steve over here has been playing Section 8 all week, and I've heard nothing but glowing remarks. But I'm going to turn the mic over to him and let him tell you for himself.
You know, I'm a shooter fan, but I'm not a huge, you know, super realistic or even the pseudo-realistic shooters. I love the sci-fi, you know. I like to have a little bit of separation between my gun and the person on the receiving end. So when I go, I can't get into Call of Duties or Battlefields. But this one, I mean, it takes the best of all of those different shooters and pulls a little bit in from each one, and then it puts its own spin on it. And I got to tell you, just listening to the podcast last week and listening kind of to their design process, what they decided to do, and then actually literally coming home that night after listening to the podcast in the car and actually playing the game, I mean, I was just as blown away as you guys were listening to what he was describing. I mean, just every second of this game just oozes awesome. I don't know how else to put it. You know, it's... Well, for instance, I was writing the review this morning, and for the first time ever, I had so many good points under the What We Like section that it literally filled the screen. I couldn't see the screenshot before or the screenshot after. So I thought, I need to break this up. Anyway, I guess let me start with what it doesn't have, because that was probably the 2 big disappointments then, because I'm sure you guys have questions and things too, and I'll talk about what it does, but, you know, the 2 biggest disappointments, honestly, in the game were the fact it's got a really, really strong campaign, and I know some people are out there for the multiplayer only, and it definitely delivers there, but the the campaign was actually really impressive. It was short, but not too short. It was about 4 to 6 hours, and it had great pacing. I never felt like I was doing the same thing over and over again, and yet I never had a point where I didn't understand what was going on because too much was going on. But the first thing I thought as I was playing through that is like, man, you know, the next time somebody comes over, they can just jump in on the couch and play with me. But there's no co-op whatsoever. And that was a little disappointing, honestly, because I realize it's an XBLA title, but, you know, this is the XBLA shooter to kill all over all other XBLA shooters. I mean, it is, it's to XBLA what GoldenEye was to N64. It's really that good. I mean, and I'm not exaggerating. I really think that because of, if it's not for what you like, it's for the sheer amount of stuff that's stacked in here. So immediately I started judging it on this higher level. I was like, okay, it's hard to find things I don't like, so we're going to take it to the next level. And the other thing that I thought was a little disappointing is there's no split screen whatsoever. And I'm not much of an online gamer. I mean, I do it, but I love having three guys in the same room so you can talk trash while you're, you know, chewing on Doritos and getting the controllers all orange and all that kind of experience. And it just, it didn't have that. I really think that listening to what they said last week about their ideas to really support this game long term, I think that those are things they're probably thinking about. And I really hope they are.
Yeah.
On the inverse, well, let me ask you this. Did you guys, last week, you got to talk with 98, did you have anything you walked away from? And you felt like, okay, well, you kind of explained it, but I want my hands on it. Because I've had my hands on it.
Yeah, that was the nice thing for me is going into that interview, and I'd already had the opportunity to play it a while back, and I was very familiar with the original console version, and the original console version, you know, was a retail title, and I mean, to look at this now and say, okay, you're adding so much more than the original, the story's actually good, it's not just tutorial missions, it's got this whole new swarm mode, which that's where they put in the co-op aspect. And they didn't really put it into, you know, the campaign as much, but they do have that swarm mode, which, I mean, I got to play that, and that was really fun. And, I mean, they put so much into this game that for $15, it's really hard to slide them for any of the things that isn't in the game.
Exactly.
When you're looking at it from the perspective of this is, you know, the title for the Xbox Live Arcade platform, I can see how you can get a little bit more critical of it. But, I mean, it just blows everything else out of the water, just looking at all the content in it. I mean, I was playing an early build when we ended up with a quote in their trailer. And it was, you know, just saying, like, this, I don't have it off the top of my head now that I think about it. But, I mean, it was basically just saying this is going to redefine the genre completely on Xbox Live Arcade and make you, you know, completely rethink what an Xbox Live Arcade game can be.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like, from what Steve's saying, is they've actually succeeded on all the stuff they were trying to do in the early builds that I played.
Oh, it's so good. You know, and it really does redefine what XBLA is worth. And it was interesting listening last week because I had wondered, you know, was this going to be a retail title at one point? And they said it was, and it wasn't until they decided to publish themselves that they went digital. I thought, man, that's a really smart move. It sounds like it's going to be a dive, but when you think about the cost of getting the disc printed and having people to build the manuals and then getting them shipped everywhere and still charging $60 versus charging $15 US,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I would guarantee they probably make 5, 6, 7 times the number of sales, which is more than what that $60 is.
Yeah, and they get a 70% cut of all those sales. Microsoft, I believe, takes 30% of all downloadable content, so you're not losing that much.
Have they ever actually made those figures exactly, you know, public? Because I figured, I know that's what Apple does on the iPhone store, but I don't think Microsoft's ever specifically said. I think it's a different deal depending on who you are and who you're going through.
Really?
Because, I mean, yeah.
All right, I thought I've seen pretty solid proof somewhere once on that, but I couldn't tell you where. That was years ago. That number's been in my head for years.
You know, the other thing about this is that it is going to end up being one of those flagship titles, just like Trials was, just like Marble Blast Ultra was. It's going to be all over the dashboard all the time, which yeah. means that it's going to perpetuate itself. When you're talking earlier, Andrew, about, you know, how do players keep staying on these games, but it absolutely has something for everybody. If you like the sci-fi Halo-type shooters, it's there. If you want to go back to the old-school stuff like Tribes, mm-hmm. that's what Conquest is, and it's amazing.
Yeah, the best thing this could get going for it is the opening spotlight advertisement the second everybody in the world turns on their Xbox, which is where some of the more popular arcade games go nowadays. So if it could get a good spot like that where everybody's going to see it, then that would be a huge way to keep new people constantly checking out the product.
Yeah, and I would guarantee that they've got that in their plans. Yeah. You know? And this is going to be one of those that's going to go on sale, you know, every 3 or 4 months, like Hydro Thunder and Monday Night Combat and all those do,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they're the flagship titles. You know, the game runs on dedicated servers, and mm-hmm. so when we were actually doing the test sessions, we had specific sessions that press had to be in just because they couldn't keep the servers up all the time as they were getting things ready. And the one testing session that I went in last, there were only 3 humans in a game of Conquest, and it's a 32-player game.
Hmm.
But it was really impressive to see, because I'm huge on bots. You know, Halo, Call of Duty, all of those are great. They're amazing. But for me, you know, I suck at shooters, especially like the more Battlefield style. And I hate, like, the first time I played Battlefield 1943, and I actually haven't played it since, is I played probably 3 or 4 matches and was the bottom guy every time. And, you know, people are picking me off from miles away and stuff like that. And I'm like, this is not fun.
Yeah.
You know, and at least Halo, I could be, you know, 5th, 6th out of 8 consistently, sometimes higher. The great thing about this is that, you know, you have the bots, and you don't have to play Conquest online. You can play by yourself and have the AI in there, and the AI are varied. It's not like 10, you know, 29 guys that all do the same sort of style. They don't follow these set, you know, paths that, you know, that if you look at the level editor, this big little string of dots that tell the AI where to go. They're very varied in the directions they take. They're varied in the style, the loadout weapons that they choose. Even their fighting style, some of them would go behind cover when they started to get low on health. Some of them would do things such as, you know, you've got jetpacks and they'll do the whole noob thing where they actually jetpack over you trying to pick you off, those types of things.
Yeah.
It was impressive, and I think that that's going to appeal to people who have silver, which is instead of, you know, a gold account, because that's still a lot of people, and this game still offers plenty for those who don't have Xbox Live Gold.
Yeah.
I think that I fell in love with that bot game with the original Unreal Tournament, just on the PC. And I wish every shooter had that, because it is a way for you to get, it's almost like a tutorial, but just a hell of a lot more fun. Because you get to, you know, rip through some people, and seeing that variety in the bot, you know, controls, that I wasn't planning on picking that up, but I probably will.
You know, and one of my favorite games of all time is still the Star Wars Battlefront series. But if you play against the AI, they are so dumb, because they have, and I've actually done modding for it, and they have very specific paths that they follow, and it just happens to be if you come into their line of sight, they'll shoot, and, you know, they could be shooting at you and strafing at the same time and fall into a vat of lava, you know. But this AI is smart, and they know where to go, they know how to take you down. They actually, a couple times, worked cooperatively to take you down. It's really impressive.
Wow.
And they knew where the lava was.
Yeah, they did. In fact, you know, there were a couple times where I was backing away and almost ended up being like the boss from Battlefront. Luckily, I had my jetpack. You know, and I just want to go over a little bit kind of what Conquest is and what Swarm is, just based on what you guys learned last week. So Conquest is kind of this, you have lots of players, it's 32 players, and you have 4 basic control points. It's kind of a capture and hold style, and
it's my kind
of
game.
On top of that, you have these just random tasks that will pop up. I think they call them DCMs, anyway, there are just these side missions that might pop up. It might say, you know, so-and-so's arriving by gunship. You need to escort them back to a certain control point. There's a convoy. You need to take out this group of soldiers. All these different things. And so it adds up, you know, this basic conquest mode, which is basically deathmatch with the guys who actually want to complete the objectives can go do that. This brings something that, you know, you get extra points for doing it. It ends the match quicker. You get other bonuses for doing it, and actually breaks up things in such a way that, you know, a guy like me who could do really good in a team game, but you put me into Slayer and I get destroyed, this is perfect. You know, because you've got the, in essence, the create a class where I can choose my weapons, I can choose my equipment, you know, and I can be the kind of player that I want to be, and still, you know, Andrew, John, and Steven can come in there and be the players they want to be, and we can all have fun versus, you know, if I were to join online with the four of you guys in Call of Duty, I would probably quit after 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's definitely something I love about how varied, you know, the multiplayer mode is to that game. So, I mean, it's definitely something that's nice, and it's going to give, you know, more options to, you know, the casual shooter fan.
Yeah, and it didn't feel like it was catered specifically to casual players. It felt like anybody could pick it up. And, you know, the coolest thing he talked about, you know, the weapon loadouts and the fact that each weapon has different types of ammunition. And it's very much a creative class. It takes that typical Battlefield, Battlefront-style class system, breaks it all down to the elements, and then basically says, okay, here are your weapons, here are the type of ammunition, here are your tools you can pick, here are the different attributes you can assign to your armor, and you get this many points. Go. And so you can do whatever you want to make whatever kind. If you want to be a sniper that also has a shotgun, so in case somebody comes after you, you can do that.
Oh, that's cool.
And that I really like, because I like class-based shooters, but inevitably, if I'm a sniper picking somebody off, you know, I get 5 or 6 shots off, and somebody comes behind me with a shotgun and takes me out.
Yeah, I find a lot of games like that when, if you're not the guy controlling the map from the second the game starts and you need that range, the second they break that line of range, there's like nothing you can do. You're just going to be spawning killed. So that's cool that you can have that.
I know that happened to us this weekend when we were playing Snoopy Flying Ace on a couple maps where, I mean, if you don't get the turret right away and say they get control of both turrets, you're just done for.
Yep. You gotta.
I mean, that's always something that's frustrating.
First couple minutes of the game is usually the most important part of the game. You get the control of the territories, but if you can switch up your weapons like that, then that allows you to alter the way you play to whatever situation you may be in at that particular time, and that's great. That's good to hear.
Because for the one, you know, the one territory you might need long range guns, the other one you might need close range guns.
Yeah.
Plus switch. I mean, that's just beautiful. That it's something you don't have to just die and change your loadout or be screwed like Halo, where, I mean, if you don't have the particular gun you need and they're camping the spawn of that weapon, you're kind of stuck.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened to some of those command posts, or like, they call them control points. Some of them are like inside a bunker, so you need to be the shotgun guy. Some of them are out in the open. So it's exactly that sort of thing. The other thing that really changes is that there are two big things, and I know, John, you talked about how much fun this was last time, but the one thing I really hated about your typical shooter is the respawn timer. And especially if you happen to just fall off a ledge or something like that, which I do a lot, you know, it ends up getting up to like 10 seconds. And I'm sitting there waiting on my turn. Well, there's no respawn timer at all in Section A. Basically, you die, you push the A button, and you drop from 10,000 feet again. And that never gets old. It really doesn't.
Yeah, it's essentially a respawn timer, but it's interactive, which is exactly what you want to do. Because people, as ridiculous as it sounds, people don't have 10 seconds to waste these days. Like, we got to be filling every second with something. So if you're going to make us wait 10 seconds before we touch down on the ground, at least we get to control where we're landing.
Yeah, exactly. And you're already adrenaline buzzed, if you will. And so you have to sit there. You're getting frustrated, but it's exhilarating to drop, and then you hit a certain point and you can actually hit the brakes. Your guy kind of goes spread eagle, and you can control a little bit where you fall. And there's nothing more satisfying than smashing some poor soul who was right underneath you.
Yeah, that's the thing. I can't wait to get good at that. That's the one thing I want to be great at when I play that game is, well, when I die, you know what? I'm going to snipe somebody with my body as soon as I come back.
And you know, you know that if you're in a party with your friends and you smash your buddy, you're just going to bust out laughing. And that's what makes this great game great.
Yeah.
You know, and on top of that, the other thing that I wanted to talk about real quick is the deployables. This is a really cool system that actually adds a tower defense element to it. Any of the game modes, really. In that, you know, as you earn kills, as you do different things, so like you can repair a turret or something, and they'll give you some credits for that. If you do an assassination, you get credits for that. If you do a kill on a vehicle, you get credits for that. Those sorts of things. And then you can actually purchase deployables, anything from a recharge station to a couple different kinds of turrets to a bike that's very similar to the Ghost in Halo to a mech suit and even a tank. And it really is, it's awesome, especially John was talking about Swarm Mode, which is basically their version of Firefight. It's really great because you need those and you need to know where to place them in order to actually win the match. Because as you get further on, the AI starts bringing out their mechs and bringing out their tanks. And you have to not only be taking those people out, but you have to be able to use that credit that you've earned to, you know, drop rocket launcher turrets, AA turrets. So that's another one, AA turrets. So if you put that where you are, guys try to spawn, you know, from right above yours, they're going to get taken out mid-drop.
Yeah.
So it's got a really nice element of tower defense. And again, this goes back to what kind of player do you want to be? Because if you want to be the guy who actually goes around and uses his repair tool to actually make sure the turrets are running while somebody else is picking off people with a sniper rifle, you can do that. And I think that's what's going to make this game, you know, the definitive game.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Sounds cool.
Yeah, definitely very cool. And for those of you guys who forgot, Section 8 is going to release in 2 days. Well, actually, by the time this podcast comes out, it will probably actually already be out.
Yeah.
So yep. April 20th, 2011. And I think that's about time for us to wrap up. We got two more things we want to talk about real quick, though. For one thing, we want you all to join us to play some Hydro Thunder on April 29th. That's a Friday. And we're going to be playing Hydro Thunder Hurricane with the Xbox Live Arcade community. And we have a post about that that you can just check. It'll be in the podcast post. And then I think Steven has another announcement he wants to make.
Yeah, so I appreciate you guys being able to hold off the release of this podcast because I did want to share a little bit of exciting news for myself and for the site. But I had signed up and put in my name for the contest through Kmart Gamer. They were giving away three opportunities to go with them for E3, to cover E3 on their dime. They'd be paying for everything. And I myself live in Connecticut and have never thought that I could ever afford to take out a trip to E3. And never mind that, with this year being so tight on people getting the credentials or getting the okay to be okay to get into E3. But anyway, Kmart Gamer will be announcing, and after this podcast, or before this podcast is posted, they will announce that I am one of the three winners for that trip to E3.
Cool. Congrats.
Yeah. So I'll be actually covering E3 for XBLAfans.com when I can. Some of the exciting new releases and everything. I believe John will be there as
well. Yeah, I'll be out at E3 as well. I've gone the last three, almost 4 years now, but it's a blast. I mean, if you ever have the opportunity to get out there, it's something you got to do. But I mean, I wish they hadn't been, you know, as restrictive on the passes this year, because I was hoping to get a couple more guys from the site out. But it's gonna be great having Steve there. I know Ben's gonna be there as well, and I think we might have one or two more people make it in. We're just kind of waiting to find out.
But yeah, so keep an eye out for on the site, on kmartgamer.com, their blog, as well as our site for the E3 coverage.
Yeah, which that's definitely awesome. It's another great way for us to be able to get our name out there and just be able to, you know, talk about XBLA fans. And we definitely congratulate you for that, Steven. And that's just awesome that you were, you know, picked for this. I mean, that's a very cool thing.
Yeah, and they we actually I had a conference call with the other winners today, and you know, we're three very different people from very different backgrounds. The other two, one would be Peter Skerritt, who is very big on Twitter.
Yeah, I know Peter.
Yep. He won as well.
That's very cool. I know him.
Yeah, so he should. I mean, we'll. The official announcement goes live Tuesday night. This will post Wednesday. But yeah, we'll be doing a live Twitter chat to announce that. So for John and the other two guys on the podcast, you can check in on that. Yeah, follow me on Twitter, and we'll make sure we post as much information as we can leading up to E3, and of course while we're there.
Yeah, and definitely we want you guys to follow the site on Twitter as well. At XBLA fans, very simple to remember. We post every article we post on the site. It goes up on our feed. If you ever want to talk any questions about Xbox Live Arcade games, free to tweet us. And if you have questions for developers, we'll ask them. And if you have questions you want to talk about on the podcast, let us know. And we're pretty much there for you guys. And we're willing to do just about whatever. So,
yeah.
Just real quick, I wanted to thank all of the Xbox Live Indie developers who have helped us to have a really awesome birthday month so far. We've got more codes to give away. We've got several more reviews coming. If you are an indie developer, you want your game reviewed this month, hit me up at Steven@XBLAFans, and we'll talk about getting you into the queue. But again, a huge thank you to all the indie developers who have helped us out this month.
Yeah, we're very nice.
And I want to thank Kathleen as well at PlayXBLA. Follow them on Twitter as well. It's at PlayXBLA, and they've given us a bunch of codes to give out as well, which has been great. So, I mean, we love being able to do this for you guys as a community, and we just want you guys to just keep coming back, and we'll have more stuff for you. And also a reminder, the podcast is now back up on iTunes,
woo!
So please subscribe. I know it was down for a little bit, and we had some technical problems, but it's all back up. I think that's about all we have for you guys this week, so thanks for listening.